In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hat.
I'm still mad at you, though.
Why?
For the dream.
Why? But I didn't cause it, and I didn't actually do the things in the dream that...
But my wife frequently gets mad at me for stuff I did in dreams, and I'm so seldom on this side, so I really want to relish it.
Okay. Well, I apologize.
Stuff I do in dreams. So William did something. He blew off the podcast in a dream. So I'm mad at him for that.
Tonight, even.
Tonight's podcast. Well, I want to be mad, and so I am.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. We didn't see you there. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast that's mad at William for stuff he did in dreams. I'm Tony.
And I am said William. And this is episode 95, is that right?
I don't know, this is your job.
I think it's 95.
You have literally one job.
No.
That's not true, he has to show up or else you get mad
at him. He has to show up to do that job.
I have to show up. In the dream, too.
But, you didn't have to do that. You chose that.
Happy New Year, everybody. You know...
It is... Yes, this is the first 2013 podcast.
I'm wearing the
sex hat
because last...
You've been on a string of sex hat.
Well, last year, the first podcast of the year was January 5th, I think. It's January 3rd now. And that was the first podcast.
Was
where
William
I wore
in his sex hat. All right, so it's the sex hat anniversary,
yes.
Everyone. So let's all just bask in that for a minute. That's just wonderful.
So I had to wear it. You know, someone has to keep track of the things that happened before.
And that's you.
Like the show archivist, if you will.
Like what episode number it is. I looked, you are right, it's 95.
That's in the past. That's today, it's 95. The past.
Yeah, but
I'm better remembering things.
The date now by knowing what the last one was.
Oh,
that's
a good point. Just add one.
Yes.
Huh. Maybe I'll try that.
Yeah, that could help. Could help a lot. Possibly. For those of you who started brand new this year, I'm sure there are tons of you out there because you're all recommending the podcast to everyone you see on the street.
And then there's those pictures on the buses.
Those too.
Yeah.
William and I have a hat. It's magic. Not his sex hat, different hat.
Yeah.
Magic in that it has its own email that it checks and spontaneously pukes out, as it were, little cards with the emails that people send it on it. Questions, topics, that sort of thing. From you guys, the listeners, / emailers. And
as
we
if
read
by
those.
Magic.
We draw those out at random and we read them and we talk about them until we're bored. That's the premise of the show. Don't say really. Yes. Yes, that's the premise of the show.
No rehearsals, no reviews, no scripts, no nothing. It's not, we pre-record it, but we don't pre-rehearse it.
We're barely here now.
It'd probably be a lot, as we've often said, it'd probably be a lot better show if we did those things, but we just don't.
Yes, but no. So welcome, everyone, to this episode, first one of the year. How was your New Year's, William?
Oh, it was good. I mean, you know, we played Mass Effect. That's what we've been doing.
Where are you? Are you done yet?
Finished with the whole
thing. You finished three.
Yeah.
Wow. We have so much we have to talk about, and most of it we cannot talk about.
Well,
on
you know.
The air. But I do want to cover a couple things, and be very careful. We're not going to spoil here.
Okay.
Did you play original ending or extended ending?
We don't have the extended ending.
That's, so
you
originally,
like you have to download it or something.
Yes, but it's free. But you do have to download it.
Oh, it is free?
It is free.
Oh.
Maybe
we'll try
it. Because they did it because they were sorry. okay, so you have only experienced the original.
Well, what happens if we download it now? Do we have to play the ending again?
I think you have to back up and finish it again, yeah. Ugh. I don't know how far, but... It's just epilogue. It doesn't change anything at the time. I never played the extended ending. I went online and read all about it.
Which is probably what we'll do.
How did you feel about the ending, as it were?
It was... plot-wise, I thought it was fairly weak for an ending.
Okay.
And then on top of that, I didn't think it made a whole lot of sense. There was a lot of... It was kind of illogical in a lot of ways.
Oh, okay. So you were not pleased with this
as Well, it's a video game. I mean, when it was over, I played a lot of video games that I thought had weak and or illogical endings. You know, it's just, it's a video game. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So when it was over...
But unlike those video games, this one had Mass Effect story.
Well, that's true. That's true. But my first thought when it was over was... I didn't know what the controversy was surrounding the ending, but I knew there was a controversy, a fairly huge one. I mean,
somewhat
big enough for me to have found out about it.
Yeah,
which that's pretty big, as you.
That's true, because you don't know shit.
And that's right. So I had to sit there and wonder, what's the big deal? I mean, yeah, I thought. Well, for one thing, my opinion about the weakness of the plot is my opinion. I mean, other people might not have thought that was a weak plot ending.
So it was much more a personal reaction than a quality of the product.
Well, that's what it felt like to me.
Yeah.
That's just how I felt about it. And even if other people felt that way about it, again, it's a video game. And like you said, it had some pretty good story up to that point. So it is a little disappointing when it doesn't, you know, end great.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't fathom why a huge backlash. And then I went to find out, you know, what BioWare did in response, because I thought maybe that would help me understand. Yes. And that gave me some insight, and I think I'm starting to figure it out.
Yeah. There are two large complaints about the original ending, and I believe I can discuss these spoiler free. The first being the sense that there was, how do I put this? The games focus very largely on choice, and your choice is impacting the story. And many people thought that the possible endings all were similar enough to make it feel as though your choices did not matter.
Yeah, well, I think that's part of what I thought when I say it had a weak plot ending.
Yeah.
That's part of what I mean. It's only part of it, but it's part of what I mean.
The second issue...
But that really bothered people hugely, like...
Quite. That was probably the biggest issue.
Wow.
Because many of them thought that was the tenet of the game, was that your decisions impact the story,
yeah,
and then at the end,
I can see
it's
that,
like
I guess.
It didn't matter.
I can see that, I guess.
The second issue was that it is a fairly ambiguous ending.
You mean
that's, I can't,
like the end of like a cliffhanger ending would be like at the end of Empire and stuff, and people didn't like it.
Sort
it was,
of, but not that. Just like I think of it more like the end of an Asian film as opposed to an American film.
Like the end of my third novel.
Possibly, I.
That's kind of ambiguous.
Yeah, the one I always go for is Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I always think that's a classic thing that I figure that a lot of Westerners didn't get.
Oh, I see.
At the end, he's standing there and he jumps off, and then that's the end of the movie, and we have no idea what happened or really why that happened or
what went
from there. And the extended ending largely is an epilogue that details what actually happened. Now, here's the thing. While I did enjoy reading about the extended ending, I fall very much on the side of thinking the original ending was just fine and liking it, and maybe preferring it. I feel like the other one was handheld. Because I'm fine with the ambiguity of the ending.
Well, right, I'm fine with that, too.
In relation to the initial issue...
Now I know what you mean by ambiguity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm fine with that part. I don't have a problem with that.
In relation to the initial issue about the choices now, I guess, for me... It's like saying, I mean, because you and I talked about this off the air before. After you finish playing one of them, you can go online and look and see that the whole thing is, you know, a programmed decision tree. If you do this, this, and this, this happens. Right. You do, and there's X number of endings, and here's how you get to them and stuff. And that's true throughout the thing. And I didn't pay attention to that at the time. At the time, I was invested in the story. And end of Mass Effect 2, where this comes up a lot. Yeah. I was really thinking like the characters.
Yeah, right.
And so at the end of this game, I'm really thinking like I'm Shepard, and this stuff happens, and here's the situation, and I made a decision, and that's what the decision did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sitting here comparing to, oh, if I made this decision, what would happen and how similar.
Right.
To me, only one thing happened, and it's the thing I did.
Right. Well, and that's why I say that's...
And it's a story. I mean,
yeah,
it's...
I know, but that's why I'm saying that's only part of the reason I thought it was fairly weak.
Well, and people...
Because to me... Well, I can't get into...
Yeah,
all the stuff. Actually,
careful.
All the stuff you
do...
just said, I'm fine with. As far as the end goes. It's other things plot-wise.
Narratively speaking, I think I know probably what you're talking about.
And
it's
now,
not a super
now,
strong
as far as the extended stuff, I tend to think... When I was saying that when I read how BioWare responded, and I'm starting to get a sense of what people are complaining about, that's what I mean. That I think I can understand a huge outcry from people who wanted to know what the long-term consequences of the choice were, how certain people were affected, what happened to them down the road, were certain party members... Did they survive the war or not? You know, and all this other stuff.
And I can
see people going crazy and wanting that information.
And
I didn't need it, but I can see other people wanting it.
I can see
it really
craving
badly.
It.
Yeah, really badly.
I can't see craving it enough to say they did the ending wrong. I mean, you don't come...
No, right.
You don't demand that movies change their endings. You don't demand that books change it. You can say, I thought the ending was a little weak. Or, I would have liked to have known more. Man, this really makes me wish there was a sequel. That kind of thing. But you don't say, they should change it.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And you certainly don't change it.
Well...
I was really disappointed in them for doing that.
That was a thing that piqued my interest about it.
For those who aren't into video games, I'm sorry about this. But also, the Mass Effect series ended. It was a really big deal. People freaked out about the ending. And so they actually made a new ending. That you could download.
Yeah, and this is what piqued my interest in it. Wasn't that people were freaking out about it? Although that was kind of interesting, like I said, because there must have been a huge outcry if I heard about it.
Yeah.
But that BioWare responded, and that they responded the way they did, that struck me as being really, extraordinary. And so I was really curious
and
about all that.
I guess I understand it from a market perspective, but as a piece of art, I was very disappointed.
Well, but.
And as a piece of art, I think it stands better with the original ending.
Well, and I agree that, you know, the issues I had with it wouldn't have required them to change anything. However, I noticed that some of the changes I read about, and I haven't read about all of them, or some of the in the extended version, some of it seemed to me clearly to be designed to keep the door open for other games and other
things.
But
supposedly they're really not. They've made a big thing of claiming this is the series.
Well, this is a trilogy, right, with this character. But that doesn't mean that they won't have other games in the universe. In fact, they alluded to that kind of in the last little...
Well, and they've already made a film, too. But I feel like they're all going to be post-Mass Effect 3.
Well, except the film isn't.
No, the film is.
The animated film?
Yes, the lead-up to James. It's what James did... Prior to Mass Effect 3.
Yeah, prior to.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. I think all of any continuing things are not going to be
post-Mass
Effect 3.
Going to be. Gotcha. I'm sorry. Well, it's hard to say. I don't know. But the thing is...
Well, that's... No, if they did that, it would be terrible, because it would also mean that one of the endings becomes canon.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I was thinking that, too, while I was going through it, is... See, here's the thing. Something happens in the regular ending that is kind of undid in the extended ending.
Yeah. There's a couple things like
that. And there's no reason to do that
unless
you want the universe to continue somehow. But as you just pointed out, the way the choices are set up, if you're going to write other things, even if you're going to have another video game...
Different things do happen to the galaxy depending on your choices.
Hugely different.
Yeah.
You would have to basically create three whole different video games to accommodate it. You can't just do what they've done in the previous Mass Effect games and have all of the different situations accounted for.
And
you
I
can't
don't think
do
they
that.
Would. And
well,
they
couldn't.
Would.
So they'd have to pick
one. No, but I don't think they'll pick one either.
Well,
I don't think they'll do
it. But see, with Dragon Age, they did do that.
Yes, Dragon Age was not Mass Effect.
No, I realize that.
Dragon Age would have loved to have been Mass Effect. It was not Mass Effect.
I like Dragon Age.
I like it okay. I still haven't played the second one, but I like it okay. But I don't. It's no Mass Effect to me.
No.
Mass Effect's probably my favorite video game series ever.
Well, and in on that score, in our household, Mass Effect, the two people who were playing it, I think it did really well. The older person playing it, you know, she really likes, as I've said before, she prefers swords over guns anyway.
Mm.
And if she's going to have guns, she likes to have a stylistic, you know, steampunky kind of thing. Space isn't really a big thing with her. But all of that, all of those biases taken into account, she liked it quite a bit.
Given those biases that should make her hate this game, the fact that she still really
no, that's
liked
right.
it
and,
is a good
and,
sign.
You know, I mean, I think, you know, BioShock is still her favorite, and Skyrim is a great, she loves that game. And it doesn't quite reach that level, but
yeah.
But I mean, I think she might play some of the third one again, even, which it says a lot. Now the other the younger person in our household has a lot of the same preferences and likes as the older one, except she does like the space part of it because she's a Star Trek fan. She loves being a commander of her own spaceship. I mean, the older person likes that too.
Yeah.
Really likes that part more than
really,
I'm really surprised how much she liked it. But the younger one likes it a lot, so that makes up for it. And this makes Mass Effect her favorite game of all time.
I remember the beginning of Mass Effect 2. There's stuff going on, and a spaceship that you are in gets attacked and like severely damaged. And this is just sort of the prologue, and so you're going. It's a lot of showing you the controls and
it's
stuff.
It's kind of the tutorial.
Yes,
and tutorial.
I think it was Mass Effect 2, and it was also the first time I was watching it on a big screen, high def kind of thing. And I remember at that moment, I went. You come up from down below, and the door opens, and the top of your ship is gone. It has been blown away, and you're out in vacuum. Luckily, you're in your spacesuit. And there's like a planet right there. And I, at the time, Trish isn't paying any attention. She's doing stuff on her computer, and I'm playing, and I suddenly go, "Whoa!" And she just looked up because it's just amazing. And the way they did the sound and everything, I felt like, now I'm in the vacuum of space, and the top of the ship is gone. Holy shit!
Yeah.
And it had so much of that kind of stuff. No, I really love that series.
Yeah,
we could just stop recording now because there's so many things we need to talk about it that we can't talk about on here.
The younger one's not done yet, but on one hand, she didn't like seeing spoilers that the other person was playing, but on the other hand, she likes knowing ahead of time what's going to happen so she can really...
Did you guys get that expansion I told you to get?
No.
Oh.
I know, sorry.
Awesome.
Well, you know, and again, the game is well enough liked in the household that we might do things like that.
I keep thinking I would go back and replay... But to do that, you have to replay the first one, and that wouldn't be hard.
Well, if you want.
And I do, because that's the thing. If I go back, I play Paragon. If I went back, I'd want to play Renegade.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one, like, the first one was really good at the time. Having played 2 and 3, the first one looks really bad.
Well,
Assassin's Creed has the same problem.
Yeah.
If
anyone goes back and plays, I'll probably just play the third one. I mean, the importing stuff was cool and everything, but... It's not quite that cool to go back and play the whole thing.
I could see doing the second one again, too. I enjoyed the second one quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. So did people in our household. So they might do that, but I think they'd probably just go back and play the third one again.
Well, we have to give a quick rundown here because I believe I saw 6 films since I last spoke to you.
Wow. 6 of them.
Yes. First, we'll go through the dumb ones.
Okay.
These were all New Year's Eve. Gaming group got together. We watched dumb movies.
Which you did do last year, the same kind of thing.
Yes, same thing.
You watched...
The difference is last year we gamed, and then that night for New Year's Eve we watched bad movies. This year, for New Year's Eve we watched bad movies, and then the next day we gamed.
Now, last year you gamed... Travelers thing, right?
We were probably still playing Traveler at that time. This year was Dresden Files. Oh, it was an awesome game, by the way. One of our people is currently possessed, and nobody knew that. The start of this arc is dealing with that. And so she and I just basically screwed with everybody the whole time. It was awesome. And we both have our little iPod touches, so we're constantly sending IMs back and forth while they're like looking, because her character ran away. And I kept switching back and forth. Her character was possessed and not possessed and didn't know what was going on. So we kept switching back and forth, and so the character would contact them, and then the character would run away from them, and then the character kidnapped one of them, and then everything took a left turn when the kidnapped character decided to send the car they were in off the road, and so she broke her leg, the possessed one got cracked ribs, and the driver died, and none of this was I prepared for. The driver was just an NPC who was helping out.
Who's
dead now. Who's going to do some stuff later, but now he's dead. So.
This opens up an interesting discussion about mobile devices enhancing the...
Yes.
Have you ever done that before?
I have. Well, traditionally, you write notes.
But then people know you're writing the notes.
Exactly. And so if you're a sneaky GM, you write notes, and sometimes they say, smile knowingly and nod your head, and that's all they say. And Cheryl tried to make that happen in this game. She sent me an IM one time that just said, "How are you doing?" And I was confused because at a certain point she had been sending me IMs that were word for word texts that were going to a different character. So I thought that was maybe, and so I said out loud, I was like, how are you doing? And she said, it was supposed to be sneaky, so they thought I was sending you stuff. And I was like, oops. But this is the first time we've really done this. The way this game works, because we try and make it very narrative, this game has been... There's been very little of hiding stuff from players.
Right, because they're part of the storytelling
process.
Because
the players need to decide on their own what they think makes a good story. Yeah. But in this one, we just thought it was too much like fun. And there's still bits of it that they don't know. And in fact, like, the player who knew they were possessed did not know until the end of the game when everyone else found out what they were possessed by.
Mm. And what were they possessed
by? By a being that had showed up earlier in the game.
Imagine that.
And that was the thing, is I started feeding the player stuff to say, and eventually it started becoming more and more obvious. And it was amazing, because the player's character, who's possessed, is talking to another player's character. And the other two aren't even there. But I mean, the guys are in the room, but the characters were not involved. And I start sending stuff, so the character who's possessed figures it out, and is like, oh, shit. And then something she says triggers the other two who aren't there, and they're like, no way. And the player who's actually talking is the last one, and we're like, oh, my God. And I'm like, we need to go home soon. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to make this really heavy-handed this time. And I threw in something that was like a direct quote from something else. I'm like, she's got to get it now. And it still took a minute, but then she got there. And I was like, and that's the end of the session. And then they were all really mad at me. But yes, that went well. Anyway, movies.
Yeah.
New Year's Eve. First, we saw a Japanese film from 2009 called Robo Geisha.
I don't think you have to say anything else.
Well, I will say, I don't recommend it.
Why did you watch it?
It was a gift.
It was a gift. What?
To Lisa from a friend. They collect bad movies. We watch bad movies. The whole point is we watch bad movies.
It was a gift.
It was a gift from a friend who is apparently a jerk.
That's really stretching Lisa, the definition
Lisa
of gift.
Lisa enjoyed it a great deal.
She did.
She did.
Why?
As a bad movie, well, you know, some bad movies are awesome. Okay. Yeah, nobody thought it was good. But it's also a movie that tries to be, like, it works really hard to be, like, funny and crazy and weird and stuff in it. She enjoyed it a lot. The producer, from what I've been able to tell, also enjoyed it. The rest of us did not. Dan went so far as to take it out of the DVD player, put it back in the case, throw the case across the room.
Wow.
But yeah, it's called Robo Geisha, so... Go with that. Then, I made them all watch Hawk the Slayer.
What?
Hawk the Slayer.
Hawk.
Hawk, like in, the bird.
That's a name?
Yes. The Slayer. Hmm. It is a movie from 1980. A fantasy film. The main villain is played by Jack Palance. It has a lot of people who, if you look at their IMDb, they went on to do some stuff. They don't do it here. It's hilarious. Like, I guess Mystery Science Theater never could get the rights. This one is just really so built to, for Mystery Science Theater. It's amazingly bad. Stuff doesn't make sense. The effects are ridiculous. There is an actual scene in which a sorceress sneaks up on one of the bad guys and imprisons him in place by lifting up her magical staff and shooting silly string out of the bottom, which engulfs him and then, like, freezes him in place. Mm-hmm. Actual silly string.
Hmm.
There are super balls with LEDs in them used for special effects in one place that just bounce around the room. The primary weapon of our hero is a sword whose hilt looks kind of like a baby arm holding a little glowing green egg. The amazing thing about the sword is he can call it to him with his mind, and he consistently does that when it is within arm's reach and never any other time.
Because that way he's actually throwing it away and you can reverse the film and make it look like he's calling
It never does. No, I don't mean like that. I mean, it's never in action when he's doing this. It's always like he stabbed it into the ground there or whatever, and then he proves that he can call it to his mind. We're like, literally, bend over, you know, lean forward. So it's amazing. And
someone off screen is handing it to him? Is that what's
going on? No, we just cut to another shot, and he's holding it in his hand.
Well, then, how does it prove anything?
It's amazing. It's hilarious. I love that. And it's 1980, so it's right at that point where everybody was sure synthesizers were the answer to all music, but they weren't really sure what to do with them yet. Mm. You know, it's a great. Everyone should see it. It's wonderful.
Nope, won't
drinks
see it.
Are good. Okay, then we watched a short animated film made by Disney called "The Story of Menstruation." This apparently was a film Disney made that was, for a time, the film that the girls went and watched during sex ed when the girls got separated from the boys.
Right.
It was amazing.
It's a lot of silence for a podcast. Why even bring it up if you're not going to talk about it?
I can't even describe.
Although
entirely,
I should be happy, shouldn't I? Yeah, let's not talk about
first
it.
First of all,
it's
a Disney cartoon. It's a Disney cartoon about
this.
But
what's so weird about that? I mean, Disney made a lot of these things back in the day.
But it looks very Disney.
Yeah,
like,
yes,
not quite
they did.
Minnie Mouse.
Did you ever see Hemo the Magnificent or whatever?
Yeah, I did see that. Was that Disney?
I'm pretty sure it was.
And but then at
the
same
really
time,
good.
They had fairly accurate. And then we got into the bits talking about how.
I don't remember.
Occasionally you might get a little twinge of cramps or something, but usually not. And if that basically they blamed you if you get cramps.
But what?
Like, if you aren't getting enough sleep, or I forget what else, you have to avoid certain exercise. They cleared up a lot of misconceptions about whether or not you should bathe while you're menstruating. Yes, you should, by the way, in case you were wondering. You should bathe.
I wasn't.
But yeah, no, but you should.
Thanks for that.
And that one was weird because it had a little cartoon woman in the shower, and part of it was like a frosted glass to cover up the important parts, you know? Except that she was topless, and that was totally clear as day, but she had no nipples. It was very weird. And the whole thing was just very odd. We laughed our asses off. Anyway, then we found out two people in the room had never seen Idiocracy. So we decided that had to happen.
Why?
Because it's a wonderful film to see.
Is it?
It's an okay film. It's not a great film. It's a good film. It holds up really well to repeated watchings. It's incredibly quotable. And it's incredibly cathartic. If you are cynical about Western society and the human race as a whole and its future, it's a hilarious movie to watch.
But when was that made?
And I
who's in it again?
It was made sometime during the Bush administration. I'm not sure. Mike Judge made it. Luke Wilson's in it, and Maya Rudolph's in it. Those are the primary leads. Dax Shepard has a pretty big part. It has lots of cameos. And the whole premise, for those not familiar, is a couple of people end up in an army experiment, and they end up in suspended animation for 500 years. When they come to, it turns out that because of the process wherein people nowadays of high intelligence tend to have few or no children, or often wait till it's too late and things like that, and meanwhile idiots are constantly having unplanned for children all over the place and tons of them, that in 500 years human society had basically evolved to the point where everybody is incredibly stupid. And so these two people who
this are... This is supposed to be the future?
Yes. Oh. That's part of it. Some of the crazy shit that's going on, you're like, we are almost there.
That was a terribly cynical thing for
but
me to say,
but that's the thing,
it?
Is some of it you're like, we are really close to this already. It's amazing, some of this. Like the hit TV show is called Out My Balls. And there's actually a masturbation channel. There's one channel that's just masturbation. And the whole thing. All the people in their houses have tubes that come down that they, like, drink. So all the water has been replaced with Brondo, the thirst mutilator, which is a Gatorade-like thing. Like drinking fountains and everything all have this. Nobody drinks water.
Thanks for describing this in such detail. I won't have to watch it now.
I recommend it.
I think it'll just depress me. I mean, you know, I don't really like the way things are, and I have a lot of hope that they might not.
Terry Crews, the Old Spice guy, before he was the Old Spice guy, plays former heavyweight professional wrestling champion and now president of the United States. Actually, president of America is what they say. Hector something Mountain Dew Camacho is the president's name. Secretary of Transportation is a 12-year-old kid who won a cereal contest and got the job.
This is the future, right?
Yes. It's pretty eerie.
It sounds really...
Anyway, so those were all the crazy...
How many years in the future?
500.
They think it's going to take that long?
Anyway, that was all the crazy New Year's Eve movies. Other than that, the producer and I have seen two documentaries recently, both of which were ones that we had been wanting to see, and they're now both on Netflix. So I recommend these to every... I recommend both of these also to people, and they are on Netflix Instant Watch. The first one was called Jiro Dreams of Sushi. You heard of this?
No.
All right. Jiro, I don't know his last name, is a sushi chef in, I think, Tokyo. It might have been Kyoto. I think it's Tokyo, though. Who is 85, has been making sushi since he was, like, 15, and is incredible at it. And his restaurant is this little tiny thing, like, in a train station, and it's ridiculously expensive. Reservations only. There are 10 seats, and... He makes it, like, you sit there and he makes it for you right then, one piece at a time. Each course is one piece. There's about a minute between courses. And so the meal takes, like, 15 to 20 minutes. And it's the only sushi restaurant in the world, like that is just sushi, that has 3 Michelin stars. And he just makes really simple, really incredible food. And so it was a documentary about him and his sons and the whole thing. As a documentary, I didn't think it was one of the greatest I've seen. The subject matter, it's not a bad documentary, though, and the subject matter totally makes it worth it. It was fascinating to see him and his history and his sons and all that. I highly recommend that. And then last night, we saw The Queen of Versailles. You haven't heard of this one either?
No.
This one, documentary filmmaker was making it a few years ago. It was... about a billionaire. He's the guy. Most timeshare resorts out there he owns. Like, he owns a ton of them. And he's a billionaire because of this. And his wife is a former Miss Florida from like the 90s or something, and like 30 years younger than him and all the standard kind of thing. And they're filthy rich, and they were building the biggest single family, single roof home in America, out in Florida. It's a huge place that was inspired by the palace at Versailles from France, which is why it was titled this. But in the midst of making the documentary, the 2008 market crash happened. The real estate market went to hell. Turns out how most timeshare companies make their money is they get people to buy timeshares, they get them to buy it with a mortgage, and they sell those mortgages to banks. Or at least that's how it used to work. So the collapse completely fucked them up, and they're suddenly without money. And so this was a look at that. And it's fascinating in a horrifying way, because it's such a perspective of how much of a different world these people are. You end up hating everybody in it. But it's just amazing to see how out of touch and how just in the own weird world. Like, the wife, they end up, she and her kids end up going back to her hometown where she was raised, which was a little town in New York, and they're flying commercial, the kids, for the first time ever, because they had to sell the private jet. And so they get there, and mom says, I guess we need to rent a car, and they go up to the Avis rent-a-car, and they're doing all their thing, and she says at one point, and what's the driver's name? And the rental guy goes, excuse me? She says, what's the driver's name? And he just sort of looks at her. She says, doesn't the car come with a driver included? And he says, no, there's no driver. And Trish was like, I'm not sure she's kidding. And I said, I really don't think she is. And just weird stuff like that throughout. And it's amazing. I mean, I spent most of the movie with sort of my jaw just hanging down. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating. And from a just sort of social perspective, it's a glimpse into something I have no concept of, but that is here and part of American society. Is just amazing to me, and how differently she sees things versus her husband, because they're in totally different worlds on this stuff. And then the kids, because seven of the kids are hers, and one of the kids is her brother's kid, who her parents died, and so they adopted her. And she's older than the others, and she grew up dirt poor, and so she has a very different perspective.
Seven kids.
She says at one point that she never knew growing up that there was such a thing as a nanny, and so she always thought she would have one or maybe two kids, but then she found out about nannies, and she just couldn't stop. There are three nannies in the house, by the way. They are all Filipino. And they all have very interesting things to say as well.
Now, what you have to remember in all of this that you're saying is that these are the people that are buying our politicians.
Yeah, that comes up in here. This guy actually claims he is directly and personally responsible for getting George W. Bush elected in the 2000 election. And he expresses some sadness about that now, but also when pressed on it by the documentarian, says he would rather not say specifically because it might not be strictly legal.
Yeah, I mean, it's entertaining to see. Wow, these people live in a whole different world. But you have to remember,
chilling.
It's not just that these people exist in our culture, and that it's not very many of us. It's like, you know, it's really less than 1%.
Yeah,
these people make decisions that impact all of us.
Yes.
To the point where your vote as an American is practically worthless.
Yes.
Dude, you got President Bush elected.
I just talked about that. Were you?
Your vote's practically worthless. The voting you do with your dollars, you know, people talk about, I'm going to vote with my dollars. That's practically worthless. It's not a joke that these people are out there and that they're disconnected and that they're crazy, because they really are in a way controlling everything. Not in a, they're getting together in the back room doing
no,
it.
No.
You don't, but the fact
their influence means more.
Yes. And there's also a feedback loop between them and the other people who have the same interest as they do that creates this kind of thing that functions almost as if they got together in these closed door meetings.
Well, and they are in the circle of society that we're not. They are friends with, you know, former presidents
This is, you know, you look at this and you think, wow, these people are out of touch and all this, but this is America.
Yeah.
The rest of us are not. We are just plebes, and that's the fact.
And I have never had a look into this. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's...
I'm not recommending this for entertainment. I'm recommending this as just a fascinating and informative
piece. Frightening is what it is.
It is that. It's absolutely chilling.
And
it's very weird.
And
we're not going
to do anything about it, probably.
I feel weird sympathy, though. I so would not want to be these people.
Oh, well, that's true.
I mean, financial difficulties aside, once that happens, it gets worse. But yeah, even watching them when they were supposedly happy, I don't want to be these people.
Here's the thing. In the United States, in our culture, the oppressor-oppressed dynamic is really the foundation of everything. But one has to recognize that the oppressor isn't life isn't good for them.
No,
they're in a cage too, a gilded cage, though it may be, and so nobody benefits from this dynamic, really, not really.
Yeah.
But you know, a lot of people think they do, and the people who are oppressed, what keeps them oppressed is instead of them thinking, "Hey, we could break this whole oppressor-oppressed cycle," they think, well...
I want to get up there.
Yeah, I want to get up there.
Yeah.
That's right. And that's... So divide and conquer, and there it goes.
Social tactic that's been around forever.
No, of course. Since the dawn of human beings, it's been around. But it's
you put yourself in a position of power, and you make your position of power look enviable, and you give either the ability, or at least the promise of the ability, that there is a way to achieve it.
Right. That dynamic, you know... What's interesting about that dynamic in our culture is not only is it dominant and it's like, you know, it's the thing that's the foundation of everything else, but it becomes the foundation of a lot of our most popular prejudices. For example, the people in the oppressed side of it, you just described it perfectly. You put yourself in a position of power and then you promise the people beneath you that they can be where you are if they just do this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah.
What that causes about among the oppressed is not just that they don't rise up against you, but part of what they have to do to get your favor is to stab each other in the back.
Yes, is to jockey for position.
Yeah, right.
Because you can make it there, but not everybody
can make it there. Then what happens? What happens then is the person who's the oppressor looks at them stabbing each other in the back and says, well, this is why I'm in power, because they are savages. I have to rule these people because they're so stupid.
Yeah.
And so... So in our culture, and in a lot of cultures before ours, this ends up being part of the gender dynamic, who are the oppressors, you know, they all get along and they're friends, but women are backbiting, catty, territorial, and everything else. But women aren't that. I mean, they don't act that way because they have uteruses. They're acting that way because they're the oppressed class.
There's social and
environmental men will influence. Act the exact same way when they're the ones who are in the oppressed position. So it has nothing to do with gender, but it becomes the basis of gender dynamics.
But I think this is what makes stuff like films like this so interesting, because you see these people who are in that position losing their shit.
Right.
And this isn't like Real Housewives fighting and stuff. There's actually there's very little yelling, there's very little fighting in this whole movie. It's not that kind of thing at all. You just see what's going on and how they're trying, and it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And just their perspective and their little, you know, moments with the camera, and just words that come out of them that you're like, really? and they're changed throughout the thing. Near the end, the guy gets really tired of doing the documentary. And he was way into it at the beginning.
Yeah, sure.
Back when he was building the house and everything. And by the end,
and the guy,
there's a point where he's like, it just goes around and around in a circle. Can we be over with this soon? Because it's just the same thing. And yeah, and just amazing. And near the end, even bits with the wife saying, like, basically at a certain point saying, you probably know more about what our our money situation is than I do, because he doesn't talk. You were up there with him for an hour and a half today, and he doesn't talk to me. And sure enough, in a couple scenes down the road, there's stuff that we've known about for half the movie that she's like, I didn't know any of this. it's amazing. I do recommend it. It's not fun. I'm not recommending this as entertainment, but it's an amazing piece of.
I don't think I can deal with it.
Documentary to see. We're lucky. We're going to pull out one question.
I've seen enough.
Because we are at 45 minutes almost.
Why do we even have the Let's Visit segment? Why do we do that? Just for our purposes? Because we like it?
Yeah.
I mean, I like to visit with you, stuff. But who else cares?
And it's interesting stuff. It depends on what it is. When we get a little too heavy into video games, that's the thing. But this is part of us, and we come with the package. You have to deal. By the way, you still have a chance to let me know if you want to be involved in episode 100. I'm not guaranteeing you will, because I still haven't done jack shit to make this happen. But I have been getting responses from some people that want to be involved.
That's good. I didn't know.
Four people so far.
Four?
Not counting the producer.
Sir Guido submits a annotated version.
Oh, Sir Guido. Sir Guido's very popular lately.
Yeah. But it's cut down.
It's been abridged.
Yeah.
All right.
Dear Hatlets.
Yeah.
President calls you to head a committee to end crappy entertainment. Foster good entertainment. Where do you start? Oh, this is an excellent question.
Well, okay. We have to set aside the fact that I personally don't believe in any governmental thing to eradicate crappy entertainment.
And as it's probably obvious by now, neither do I.
I'm fine with government wanting to foster good entertainment. BBC does some of that.
Yeah, I don't care. I'd rather the government not be involved in any such thing.
Ideally, but if they want to,
But the question's really trying to get at.
If that's going on, how are you going
to
make
it? If you had the power,
yes,
somehow, to make entertainment better, what would you do? How would you start? This is an excellent question. But I want you to give your...
Well, I'll tell you the big one. And this is not just because I have a giant chip on my shoulder with the word Firefly written on it. This is a real thing, I believe. I would be much more specific about the length of time programs were on. Programs that are serialized would get at least one full season, if not two, regardless of ratings. If I was going to commit to it, I was going to commit to it. Because you know what? Sometimes shows kind of suck in the first few episodes. Sometimes they suck in the first season and they go on to be really good. On top of that, however, all shows would have a cutoff point. I'm thinking probably five seasons at most. And you would know that going in. So, by your fifth season, you'd be able to wrap stuff up.
Maybe given exceptions, if someone can give a compelling argument to extend it two seasons, maybe you might be willing to do that.
Possibly.
But not an unlimited thing or some 10-season thing or anything
Or if it is in more of a British thing, if it's something that is cyclical where each season is fairly self-contained, then I might keep doing them as long as I thought I had good seasons.
Okay.
But in general, I think that is two of the biggest problems on television is ending stuff too soon and ending stuff too late.
Yeah.
Now, yes, I'm also going to get rid of most of reality television. Not all of reality television. Most of reality television. I think it has its place. I think it is a type of entertainment that cannot be matched in a scripted thing. And I think it is part of the culture now. And we have shown that there are maybe two or three reality TV shows I watch only. And I really kind of enjoy them. Soup, Project Runway.
Okay, this is these are excellent suggestions for television, and I totally agree. But what about film, music, and video games?
There it becomes largely an issue of leveling out funding. We're not going to make any more $300 million movies. We're going to take maybe $200 million of that and we're going to give it to some people who have some independent ideas. We're going to give stuff to, well, largely it's a matter of giving it to independent people. And I think that's a huge thing right there. We give the money to a whole lot of independent people. I'm not even particularly, I have a pretty low bar for whether or not I'm going to like the movie. I think we need to have a shit ton of different voices out there making movies, making books, making video games.
Agreed.
I think diversity is absolutely key.
Now, this raises a question, though, because in regard to those things you were just talking about, and maybe television, too, now that I think about it, the internet promised to undercut all of the industry stuff.
Yes.
And essentially accomplish whatever, just about everything you just said.
And?
And I agree with all those things.
And to be fair, I think it has had limited success.
Limited by the fact that YouTube, for example, was what YouTube said it was going to be for all of 6 months before it was overtaken by commercial stuff.
Yes.
And also had ways for certain types of content to reach the top and be very popular, absolutely, while other types of content, you know, which is perfectly good, but can't break through the cultural
crap. And that's not gone. It's all sort of, Twitter actually has promoted tweets and stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, it's all still there to a fairly significant degree. That being said, there is a ton of programming and entertainment that has happened on the internet and that has become successful on the internet that could never have been made, that in this culture would never have been made into a TV
show. That might be true, but there's a lot of stuff out there that's really good that maybe gets a season. I don't know where they get the money to do it, but they get the money to do it, and it can't compete with stuff that, you know, the established things like YouTube and Google promote, because they're paid to promote it. And so you get right back to where you are with commercial television and all the commercial stuff. So the internet, even though it allows things to get produced that wouldn't have gotten produced otherwise, it doesn't make any difference if the way these things are promoted are the same way things have always been promoted, and those things only get, you know, a week or two. Now, true, it still does allow certain things to get through that never would have gotten through before, because at least they get produced.
Yes.
But it's not enough. And I don't know how it's going to be enough, because the way the internet's running right now, how will it ever be run a different way? Because nobody's running it. Okay, this is all emergent. This is all just happening.
Yeah.
How does it stop happening?
Well, a lot of people make the argument that at the point where computer and television and entertainment center and all that stop being individual devices makes a huge difference, because right now it takes more effort and it's less instinctive to go watch something online. Because here's the thing. I can see stuff that hasn't been promoted. I can see stuff that only I and a few people like. Well, this podcast right here, it's not being promoted. It has a very small following. However, those people who like it get to still have it. This right here is the success of the internet in that very way, this podcast.
Right.
Because if we didn't have that, we couldn't do this. We could not have sold this idea to television or radio. And if we did, the fact that we have 12 listeners would have killed it right away.
But we've also been on filmmaking ventures that, and the films, I mean, I've seen a lot of films that people celebrate on the internet that aren't as good as some of the stuff
we made. But the films you and I made still exist out there, and people can go see them right now. If we get to the point where your television has all that shit right there, which we are theoretically very close to, some people say that will make a big difference. You're sitting there on your couch with the TV with your remote, there's nothing that stops you from watching the web series instead of the TV show.
No, I realize that, and although we're kind of already there, it's just the problem right now with that. I was listening to a report on the way in about this, and people were talking about the TV, you know, melding with the computers, whatever. There's a difference between television as a device in your home and television as an information technology, okay?
Yes.
Television as an information technology has already become, you know, the internet is a multimedia platform.
Yes.
But it is that the media form in that multimedia milieu that sort of anchors the whole thing is television, let's be honest. Television has taken over the internet. I mean, when we talk of television as an information technology, and for a person like me who has no problem ignoring the device in his house called the television, it's already happened. I mean, TV, there's already no difference
but
between television and internet
and everything
else. But
the average individual does not consume their entertainment via their computer.
But it's interesting
that
people
still consume it via the device.
It's interesting that people think of the device as the technology. Like, oh, you know, when they're watching television over the internet, they're not watching television. You know,
hey.
Actually, anytime you watch any cinematically produced piece of content online, you're watching television.
Yes,
that's television, people. It doesn't matter if you're not watching it on the thing in your house. You call it television.
Well, then you can call it network television.
Well, you call whatever you want.
The
but
point is,
but what you're saying is,
by that token, if somebody goes online and watches Inquire Within, they're watching television.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, but for what we're talking about here, this is getting semantic, because for what we're talking about here, television is a very distinctly different thing than Inquire Within.
Well, no, what you're telling me is that people are getting hung up on the device like it's some separate thing, some separate world, and so when they sit down to watch television, it's not occurring to them that there are other things on they could watch that aren't being broadcast directly through this device. So they won't shut the thing off and go to their computer,
yes,
and watch it
there
instead.
Yes, because they have a tendency to do it from that device.
Right. So,
and so the argument goes, and I'm not saying this is my argument, but this
I understand.
At the point where people can just as easily watch Inquire Within on there as they can watch SVU.
Which some people have their entertainment system
do.
Set up so
some
it works
people
like
do.
That.
At the point where that becomes more mainstream, then it becomes more easy. Because I, for $10 and some friends of mine, can make some shit that anybody can watch on their television.
Yeah.
Right now I can do that and anybody can watch it on their computer.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people don't do that.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
It's not...
But
It shouldn't be the thing that makes the difference,
right, but it's,
obviously.
It's not an
but
information...
I think it is.
It's not an information tech thing. It's
no.
It's a device. It's a hardware thing.
It's a cultural thing.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's a cultural thing. It's putting the content in the place where the eyes are.
All right, so let's say that eventually people get over their weird cultural thing about this is a different device than this, and they get stuck watching the television instead of... Because now they can watch, like you said, Inquire Within on their television, and the bias they have toward looking at these devices as separate things is overcome by this. You think that somehow will... I mean, one thing it will definitely do, if what you're saying is true, is it's going to create a lot more people looking for content online,
yes,
who don't currently because they're too busy watching, you know, television,
and
quote unquote, the television device.
The content is not restricted and limited the same as it is on a television network.
Right, but
it is also not monetized quite the same.
But here's the thing: the problem with the internet, it's not really a problem, but it becomes a problem, is there's so much out there that nobody wants to take the time to look for it. They want someone else to look for it for them. And whoever looks for it for them, Google, who, for example, is going to have... they're not going to give priority to everything out there.
Right.
And not only that, but, you know, Google, under the pretense of... and maybe even the sincere belief on their part, that they are going to give priority to the things they think you like... are actually steering you toward the things that are going to make them more money.
Absolutely.
So that what happens is the internet gets actually, in the process you're talking about, the internet actually gets less diverse, and those other voices get less likely to be heard.
And the monetizing, it's not going to change anyway until the monetizing is much more secure. But here is the one glimmer of the concept's not going to change. You're talking about a basic social concept that's not going away. People already tell us what to eat and what cars to drive and everything
else.
Well,
that doesn't have to be the case.
I know,
but it is.
But what you're talking about, we have no business discussing it specifically in the realm of entertainment. That's a much larger society-wide issue about market-driven culture.
Well, it's... It might be bigger than entertainment, but it is information technology.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think it's even bigger than that. But anyway, but the glimmer that you don't have here is viral videos. Somebody, the one crazy bastard who goes out there himself, can find something that they think is hilarious, and they have the means to tell enough people that if they think it's hilarious, can tell enough people that eventually it can become a big-ass thing. Nobody at Google, nobody at any company decided Gangnam Style was going to be the thing it was. They jumped on it later, and right, now it's gotten ridiculous.
But that's not a glimmer, because the viral videos are falling one of two categories. There's some home movie that someone shared with just their family that had some weird, quirky thing about it that everyone thought was funny, or it's something that is fairly slickly produced. I mean, you know, that is good and people pass it around. Not many things go viral that are made on the shoestring budget and with the kind of quality constraints that, say, our work had.
I don't think I agree. I think the original production, for example, of The Guild was pretty close.
No.
From the makings of stuff and how much it cost and what was involved, I think it was pretty close. Nobody got paid on that. On that first season, nobody got paid.
Well, no, they didn't. But the people they had working on it were getting paid to do that on other things. You follow what I'm saying? It wasn't like a bunch of people who worked at some place together who weren't already camera people or directors or whatever. The people who were doing it for free were working on other projects. I mean, that was their job. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, but there's lots of web shows now. Hannah Hart doing her My Drunk Kitchen stuff. Axe Cop,
okay,
that
but,
guy.
But see,
Epic Meal Time.
Right. But think about those things. Think about what you're... Like the My Drunk Kitchen. Okay, that's a good example of something. It doesn't have huge production values or whatever, and it's funny and it's viral and everything. But it still falls within a... All the stuff that becomes viral and is making it still fit within a very particular range of...
See, now I think you're just getting into art criticism.
No, I'm not. I'm saying that there's a recognizable... You know, you remember Dig?
I never did anything with it, okay. But I remember what it was. I think it's still around.
Well, it's probably still around. But that had suffered from a very similar problem. So I'll describe it so we get away from the question of whether this is art criticism or not. Dig was supposed to let, you know, possibly otherwise obscure pieces of information get out there because it would rise to the top because of how much interest people had in it. But even Dig started, if you went there to find what the popular stories were, it was pretty obvious that a very narrow demographic of people were determining what the popular stories would be.
And I'm not questioning that. You keep making it sound like, and then the rest was just gone, and nobody ever discovered it.
No, I'm not making it sound like that.
Well, that's what I'm saying is,
no.
Despite your problem, and despite the situation, which I agree is there, and still sucks, I don't think it's as hopeless as, say, television right now. There's shit that has zero chance of anybody ever watching it on television.
It's not a point of it being hopeless. It's a point of it being... It's a change, and as I've agreed with you several times already, it does allow certain things to break through that wouldn't have otherwise, but then it sort of plateaus, and then it's just the same thing again.
I think it, the amount of change limits, but I don't think it ever completely plateaus.
Well, looks like it's plateaued to me. I mean, everything I see is the same old thing over and over again, just like TV was and just like radio became. I mean, different stuff,
well,
but then it's the same stuff. Same.
Honestly, I think we're getting a little dangerous into argument here because I'm really wanting to give you some emotional responses. Mostly, I'm finding it a little grandiose on your end. You seem to be saying you know all the shit that people see on the internet.
No. In fact, I just got done saying, this is what I see.
But you seem to say that there was all this stuff, but now they've found a way to make it go away, and now it's all just the same stuff. You know,
no,
just because most of it is,
away.
And just because it's the stuff that's promoted.
Why do you keep saying it went away? It didn't go away, but that's not the point. That's not my point.
Well, then what is this plateau? There is still original individual content being created and putting it on the internet every day, and people are finding it, and people are sharing it.
But
it may be much fewer than the people who are sharing the stupid stuff that Google promotes, but it's still happening. And the growth and the change still exists in small levels and is still better than what we had.
Yeah, better. But
that's the huge thing. Your argument keeps making it sound like you say, it was better for a little while and now it's just the same. No, it's still better.
It's still not
as good as we'd like it to be, but
no,
it's still better.
When I say it plateaus, yeah, it's better, but I don't see how it's going to get better than it is right now. This is what I'm saying. The internet, from what I can recall, sort of promised that it wouldn't just get better, but it would keep getting better.
Yeah, TV also promised nobody would read books anymore. I mean,
but what's happened is, it got better,
because
and now
the
it's done getting
the
better.
The internet did not redefine society, of course not.
Well, I was kind of looking forward to it doing that.
Well, then you were naive.
But you think that about everything that I think.
Well, because the scale of revolution that is involved to change the systemic issue you're talking about, it takes more than the internet. It probably takes
yes,
violent military conflict or some sort of...
I don't know if it takes that.
...scarcity resource
holocaust.
It takes some form of apocalypse, I think.
Oh, well, that's probably true.
Yeah, well, the internet was not an apocalypse.
No, and I didn't expect it to be. That's not... It doesn't matter. It's been a disappointment, is what I'm saying, in a lot of ways, for me, personally. And it continues to be.
And I believe that.
I get
a lot of stuff on the internet that I like. And I think that's where we get emotional. I totally understand the reason for you to be disappointed. I kind of take it personally, for no good reason, because I see stuff on the internet that I like, and I'm like, only the internet could make this happen. And so when you argue that you're disappointed, I'm like, you're crapping on the stuff that I like.
But I'm not. As I've said repeatedly, yes, things got better. But I would like them to get even better, and they won't.
No,
so.
But do you understand what I'm saying? I'm not saying I'm...
Well, no, I don't understand what you're saying, because how is me saying that...
I'm not saying
that
it's a rational argument.
Oh, okay, well.
What I'm saying is, I sit here, and from my perspective, I'm like, I feel good because of this, this, and this with the internet. And you're saying, I feel bad because of this, this, and this. And we're both right.
Okay.
But the fact that I'm trying to... Well, just imagine, you're trying to be positive about something, and somebody says, oh, yeah, but it could have been better because of this and this.
You want me to imagine that?
Yes.
I thought that was the whole premise of this show!
Well, there you go.
I'm trying to be positive about something, and you're crapping on it. I mean, that's just what happens.
Well, yeah. So,
I know what that is.
Well, then look what's going on right now.
It doesn't piss me off. It's like, well, okay, that's your opinion.
What? Yeah.
I mean, I've had to live with it my whole life.
This may be the emotional investment thing again, because my immediate thought is, imagine your goddaughter did something cool, and somebody came to you and talked about how disappointed they were because of very legitimate things that she could have done to do better. You might feel a little bit of an emotional response.
It's hard to say.
And it wouldn't necessarily be fair if they're saying legitimate things.
I can't imagine getting upset if they were saying legitimate things.
Of your kid?
What? Why would I get upset about it? She's not being hurt by what they're saying. They're not taking a stick and beating her. That would make me pissed off.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Why get upset about something that's not hurting her? And maybe they're giving positive feedback that I can give to her, hopefully, in a gentler, more constructive way. So why would I get upset about it?
Wow.
What?
Different world. Just, we're in a different world.
Why is that? Is that bad? Do you think?
It feels weird to me. It feels very weird to me.
I don't know.
It's probably the smarter attitude. But I mean, it's the healthier way to do it. It's the more sane way to do it. It just feels very unnatural to me.
What would be the natural thing to do? I don't understand.
It's your kid. They did something. You're proud of it. You think it's cool. Mm-hmm. The other person is just talking about all the bad stuff. I'd be a little bit mad. Depending on who it is, I'd be like, I understand you're not trying to do that. But I'd be like, you know what? Shut the fuck up. They just did this cool thing. Let's be happy about that.
Well, I could be happy about it. It wouldn't bother. It wouldn't affect my happiness, whatever they're saying. I'd be happy about it. What's they're saying about it have to do with my happiness? Why should I care? I mean, especially if I don't agree with them.
No, in this case you do, because the example right here, I agree with everything you're saying.
Let's say I agree with them?
I agree with everything you're saying.
Okay.
And your
I still
argument,
don't see how it would make me less happy.
Because I mean, I'm trying to be positive about something.
And I'm still positive about it.
No, you're being quite negative about it.
No, wait. Like, we're talking about my goddaughter.
Okay, you got her.
She does something great, and I'm excited about it, and someone says, it could have been this, it could have been that. I don't see how this should affect me being excited about it. I mean, I'm still, you know, if I'm excited about it, I'm excited about it. What's going to change that? Just someone talking about it?
And pointing out all the not great things about it, yeah.
But I still don't, I don't see what connection there is between them talking about the not great things about it and me being excited about it.
And that's weird.
That's weird?
People expressing cogent, legitimate, negative arguments, wholly negative arguments, okay, about stuff that you feel personally about,
yeah,
and feel positive personally about,
right,
often make you upset.
But why? What's...
Somebody explain this to him. I don't know how to explain it.
But
to
me,
it's as natural as breathing. Absolutely as natural as breathing. And it's not rational. It's not something... I mean, it would be great to live in a world where I didn't feel that way, but I do. Absolutely feel that
way.
Well,
and that's fine. You feel that way. That's great. I don't have a problem.
No, but I really don't think I'm the unusual
one. No, and I'm not saying you are. I have no idea. All I'm saying is I don't understand.
I know, and I'm saying I am amazed you don't. I am saying I have never felt more different from you than I do right now.
Really? Wow. That's saying a lot, because I think...
I'm saying I don't understand not understanding that. I'm not... In no way... I apologize. In no way am I attempting to say you are invalid by not understanding it.
What? Come on. That's your primary attitude toward me is my invalidity.
No, not when it gets serious. This is weird shit here.
Well,
I'm just... You know, maybe you and I had to talk about this before. This is emotional... being...
Oh, this is me being
influenced.
A sociopath.
Yes. No, but you know, we had the talk in your driveway the one time about being influenced by emotion and your ability to... to acknowledge that and separate that from the situation in ways that I told you most human beings do not.
But I...
This is very much one
I can
of those
get, I can have a strong emotional reaction to something my goddaughter does and be really excited, and just like you said.
Yes, because you acknowledge that that's cool to do.
Yeah.
When somebody else is showing all the shitty stuff about it, you say, well, that would not make sense for me to let that influence my good mood, therefore I do not.
And that's wrong?
No, most humans just can't do that.
Can't?
No.
Oh, come on.
Cannot.
If
or do not. I don't know. Take your pick. Most humans do not. Help me out here, people. Maybe I'm really confused, but I'm pretty sure the vast majority of humanity would react the way I'm talking about.
And you can't explain to me why they would do that?
Because to me it's just second nature.
Right, I get what you're saying. But after being asked, you can't reflect on it and say, well, this is probably why.
Well, give me some time. I don't know.
Okay.
Give me a few years, but I doubt it. If it was that easy to explain, I think it would be dealt with more. Because it's not a good thing to have happen. To let other people influence you like
that. How could it be good or bad if it's just the natural way people are and I'm just a freak?
Well, because it's irrational. It's a problem. It's the exact same situation that lets people be angered or upset when people like tease them about stuff. It's the exact same emotional response.
Hmm.
kids tease you for being, even if they tease you for stuff that you know doesn't matter, it can still drive you to tears or make you really angry.
Yeah. But I mean, I remember being teased when I was a kid, and it, I don't remember it. Most of the things I remember, I sort of thought about it and sort of rationalized it or something. I didn't really deal with it like that.
Not the norm. If that was the situation, nobody ever would have brought up bullying as a social issue.
Maybe that's true. I mean,
if everybody had dealt with it the way you are, we'd all be fine.
Well, but that's not necessarily the case. I mean, bullying, even if it doesn't impact
you emotionally. Well, there can be actual aggressive bullying, which is a different thing.
Well, and also, it's just it's just bad. I mean, you could you could be angered by it without it taking it personally. Like, look, you can call me whatever your name you want. I don't care. But I don't like the way you're treating, you know, other people. And I don't think it's okay for you to treat me this way. And so I'm going to be angry about it. But not because I'm taking what you're saying seriously, but because this is a social injustice and I'm angry about it.
If everybody was affected by bullying the way you apparently were, it would be completely ineffectual. There would be no particular reason for you to be bothered by other people getting bullied, because it wouldn't be affecting them either.
Oh, well, that's kind of a good point. Except that you see them being upset by it.
Yes, because they don't react the way you do.
Right.
If everybody reacted the way you do, it would not be an issue. We are so over time, it's just not even...
This is all very frustrating real. For me, though. You know that.
I do know that. And usually when we hit close to this is when our discussions tend to get heated, like this one kind of did. Usually it's when we get to this line... is when this happens.
Well, I'm not saying you frustrate me.
No.
This reality.
No, but what I'm saying, usually when we start touching on things that get close to that, you can tell because both of us get our emotions up in the conversation.
No,
and that happened here. This is one of the more heated arguments we've had in a while. Probably one of the most heated ones we've had on the podcast.
The podcast. But when I say
And inevitably, it means we're getting close to this thing, this reality difference.
It frustrates me because, you know, I whether it's rational or not, I trace a lot of my interpersonal relationship problems to my inability to understand these things that you're talking about. And I feel like it's my fault then that these things happen. And
No. It's and don't get me wrong. In some ways, I very much envy your perspective. I always have, but. Insofar as it is unenviable, it should much more be looked on as a... I really hate to use this word, but it's the best thing I can think of. A disability.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
But, and therefore not your fault.
Well, I don't see how that follows, really.
You didn't make yourself this way.
No, that's true. You're right about that.
And that's the thing. What you have to do in this day and age... and luckily you're a grown-up in the 21st century and you can do this, is find people who can understand and can relate to you like this. You and I can be friends and can be good friends because we take the time to get to know each other and understand each other well enough that we interact quite well. It doesn't mean that we're not both coming from these wildly different perspectives in terms of the emotional influence.
Yeah.
But people are aware of that. And to put it in terribly glib terms, your good friends, when stuff like this comes up, will often say, that's just William. And it is. And this is why I say all generalizations do not include you, because you operate differently. But people who know and understand that appreciate you for who you are. You are incredibly unique, and there is tremendous value in that.
Well, I appreciate, you know, you saying that, and I appreciate that you believe that's true.
But don't get me wrong, I think it would suck to be you. But for other reasons, but I think you have talents and abilities stemming from this that no one else has.
Well, again, very nice of you to say, but I'm not sure that has really proven itself to be true. But I mean, you know, we'll see.
I don't know. I've gotten lots of insights and things from you that could only have come from you. I get a lot...
I don't know if that's complimentary or not.
I get a lot from your perspective.
Well, and I get a lot from your perspective. I mean, I really love coming over here and having conversations with you, and it's sometimes you really open my eyes to things, and that's one of the reasons I'm sure that we're really good friends. But but you know, and it's just I get frustrated is all. With you, but
No. The concept of being different, and that's inherently what we're talking about here, is you are different in the realm of perspective, I think. Is the best way to put it.
Well, and being different
is always difficult.
Is it always?
It can be cool, but, well, because you don't share commonality in that axis with anyone.
Right, but you and I are different from each other, and that's what makes our friendship so great.
Yes. Well, and our friendship is not what's frustrating.
Why can't all the friendships be like that?
Because it's not like you're one color and I'm one color and Trish is... No, in this particular thing we are talking about, it is much more like you're one color and we're all one color. Because I think, and I may be being way too presumptuous here, I think some of the concept we're talking about is fairly unique to you. And it's not like you learn a different emotional interaction with me and then a different one with somebody else. And there is some of that, but I think we're dealing with certain commonalities that me and person C would already have, and it'd be there are certain emotional assumptions that are there that you don't have with either of us. Mm. To be that singled out can be frustrating.
Well, it's mostly frustrating because there are things I want to accomplish in my life that I can't do by myself, and I don't want to do by myself. I want to collaborate. I want to be part of a team.
Yes.
But you can't be a part of a team when nobody wants to work with you, and nobody's going to want to work with you if they think you're a freak.
Well, that's not wholly true, but it is more difficult to work with people if you have certain fundamental differences in your social perspective, in your emotional processing, things like that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't happen all the time. I work with you right here. I mean, we're also friends, but we're also doing a podcast together.
Yeah, you put up with me is what it comes down to.
I specifically chose you for this podcast.
And I know, that's you did, and I appreciate that.
And I specifically would keep you for this podcast.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Unless I get a better offer.
Kraft dinner.
Nobody likes me, so I won't get a better offer. So
that's not true. Lots of people like you.
I know, but I'm trying to give you hope.
Oh. No. I see.
We're so over, but would you feel better if I gave you a present?
No.
Well, I'm going to give you a
because
present.
Because I don't have a present for you.
Too bad. Oh. I have a Christmas present for you. Unlike last year, I don't think you already have this.
Was that Christmas? I thought that was my birthday. No,
no
it was
I think
Christmas.
It was Christmas.
Okay.
I didn't wrap it, so deal.
The Revenge of Trish and Tony's Cookbook. What's that mean?
I don't think you were around for the original. I mean, I knew you, but I don't think you got one.
Technically, say Trish's and Tony's.
I believe in 2007, the producer and I put together a cookbook, a collection of recipes from her family, from my family, things that we had discovered online and really liked, things that we had discovered through cooking experimentation and really liked, and we put them all together in a cookbook, and we self-published it at lulu.com, and we gave it out to friends and family.
Oh, there's a picture of you on the back. That's cool.
This year, we took that cookbook, and we added in a bunch more recipes, including a bunch that are scans of family recipes written in family's handwriting. And we put it all together in here. So this contains all the stuff that was in the original one.
Oh.
Plus a bunch of new stuff. There is quite a bit in here that's vegetarian. There's a lot of stuff in here that can very easily be translated to vegetarian.
Yeah, I'm noticing that. That's really cool.
It's just some of our favorite foods. If you've ever been at a potluck and things, a lot of the things we've made are in there. It's a lot of family recipes in places, a lot of real simple stuff that we like to make.
That's really cool that you just put the, like you said, the handwriting.
That was her big dream. That was that desire to do that was the main impetus. Her desire to do that was the main impetus for the second
edition. And what I'm getting at, for those who can't see it, which is everybody, the pages have actual pictures of the handwritten recipes, which is really cool.
Yeah, we actually got handwritten recipes, some by living relatives and some by old ones out of recipe books and stuff, and scanned them in, and they're in the book.
Very cool.
And there's just a lot of good stuff in there.
So. And some of these things I've had over here, and they're really good.
Yeah, a lot of stuff from the old potluck days is in there.
Very good.
The black bean stew is in there.
Very good. Lots of desserts in here. I like that. Well, thank you so much.
And
I
some canning stuff. This iteration included some canning if people want to get creative with that. Because Trish is very big into canning, and so she added a section on that.
Well, that's very kind of you. I appreciate
that.
Well,
Merry Christmas. A little bit late.
Thank you.
And we are so over, so do you want to thank Sir Guido?
Yes, thank you, Sir Guido.
Thank you, Sir Guido.
Submission.
Guess you guys get the extra long podcast of all time, so enjoy that.
Sometimes we have these group therapy podcasts that go along, and what it's mostly
puts butts in seats.
It's mostly me having some kind of stupid problem.
No, I think our listeners will find this very interesting.
Well,
other people might not, but our listeners will. If they've listened this far, they're into it.
Maybe we'll see.
We love you guys, and we hope this new year brings you wonderfulness. And we will talk to you in a week.
Next week.
All right, now let's talk some Mass Effect.
Okay.
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Ant Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.